Welcome to the Real Life Buyer Podcast. In this podcast, you will hear interviews with business owners, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, authors, and technical specialists in their field. These professionals will hasten your development, accelerate your career, and broaden your business know-how. Now, introducing your host, Dave Barr, interviewing with a purchasing twist.
Hello, and welcome to the Real Life Buyer. Are you now, or do you wish to be a coach or consultant with a successful and growing business? Or are you struggling to find the time and actions needed to start or scale to a six or even seven figure annual turnover? My next guest, Nikki Blue, based in Toronto, is a co-founder of eCircle Academy. Here, eCircle runs a year-long mastermind and educational program working with coaches, consultants, corporate trainers, and other service-based entrepreneurs to position themselves as authorities in their niche. Nikki is also the co-founder of The Million Dollar Clinic, opened its doors in September 2019. On top of all this, Nikki is an international best-selling author of no less than seven published books and the host of two highly successful podcasts, the Thought Leader Revolution podcast and the Sovereign Man podcast. So let's dive into a conversation and find out more. Hello, Nikki, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me here, man. It's an honor to be here with you, brother.
The honor's all mine, I can assure you, my friend. Before we explore eCircle Academy, can you explain how you came to reside in Canada and became so knowledgeable and successful in your area of expertise?
That's a great question. So I'm actually originally an immigrant from the Middle East. I'm a Christian from Iran. And when I was a young boy, the Islamic Revolution was happening in Iran. And my late father, God rest his soul, he could see the writing on the wall. And he knew this was not going to be a great place to raise his family anymore. So Dad got us out of Iran and we eventually settled in Canada. And I got to just say one thing to you. I know it's very fashionable these days among certain circles in the West to self-flagellate and say, oh my God, the West, so oppressive, so racist, so sexist. I push back hard against that because I think that's a load of baloney. This is the greatest, freest place on earth. The United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Germany, France, spectacular places to live. You know, the rest of the world is not so open and not so tolerant. If you look at my home country of Iran in the last few weeks, a young woman named Mahsa Amini was murdered by the so-called morality police because she let some of her hair show from underneath her headscarf, her hijab. And she was murdered for this. And the young women in Iran have been rising up and protesting against this. And over 150 of them have been murdered by this thugocracy, this regime. And they've done this, you know, because they don't want women to be free. And if you look at the West, that's obviously not the case here. We have freedom here. We believe in freedom. And I think it's important for those of us that believe in freedom to push hard against these folks who are falsely smearing the rest of us and our great society in the way that they do. I think it's very, very important. And I'm a champion for freedom. I'm a champion for free enterprise. And my father, he was an entrepreneur. And, you know, entrepreneurs are operating in the free enterprise system. And my dad is the greatest man I ever knew, Dave. If you needed a job, Dad would help you get a job. If you wanted to get a start in business, Dad would help you get set up in business, even if you were going to compete with him in his business. He didn't care about that. He just wanted to be of service to people. And if you worked for him and you wanted to buy a house, a car, or an apartment, and you didn't have the money, Dad would help you get it. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, Nikki, what? Your dad did what? Who does that? And the truth is, my dad does that, or did that, you know, when he was still alive. And why did he do it? You might be thinking to yourself, well, first of all, he was a Christian. And he believed he'd been blessed by God Almighty, and it was his duty as a Christian to share his blessings with others. But secondly, he did it because he could. Dad had the financial wherewithal as a successful entrepreneur to be able to be of service to people and to help them. And so me, I wanted to be like my dad. I wanted to help people too. And I became an entrepreneur. And here's one thing I noticed. A lot of entrepreneurs are good people. They've got good hearts. They want to make a difference for people. They want to share their vision with the world, but they're a little bit nervous in sales. They're like wondering, oh, are they going to think I'm pushy? Are they going to think I'm salesy? Are they going to think that I reek of commission breath? I don't want to reek of commission breath. So, you know, a lot of these good folks wouldn't really go and ask for the sale, as it were. And as a result, they would miss out on revenue and business and turnover that was wonderful. that they could have and grow their business and serve their families. The customer that they could have served would miss out on the solution they would offer to these folks. And some charlatan marketer would come with zero compunctions and just scoop up their money and not care whether they got the result or not. And that reduced the sum total of love and goodness in the world. And I saw all this and I thought, you know, I can help these folks. You know, they don't need to look at sales as this horrible thing. What if we reframed it for them? What if we helped them look at sales instead as service? Not selling, but serving. Nobody wants to be sold, but everybody wants to serve and be served. And that's the beauty of it, is when we teach people how to look at things from the point of view of serving the people in front of them rather than trying to sell them or close them. Oh my God, those are just yucky words. Then good things happen for everybody involved.
It's a really nice story. And to have somebody that's so close to you act as a guiding light for your future, I think is a very rare and blessed thing to have. So I do appreciate that. So there appears to be a significant uplift of coaches, trainers, and experts offering their services. And I've seen this quite a lot on social media feeds. I'm regularly seeing somebody who's the latest expert in something or other. So with this increased resource coming to market, competition must be heating up. So I'd like to explore the six steps you mentioned in one of your publications that I've read recently. One of those steps, the first step, is where you refer to realize it's not about you. Can you tell us what you mean by this step and why it is so significant?
You know, that's a great question. One of the reasons people are not good at closing business, as it were, or making the sale is because they put all the focus on themselves. Is that person going to like me? I need the sale. I really need the sale. I really need the sale. It's got to happen for me. What are they going to think of me? Are they going to buy my program? Those are the kinds of thoughts that go through people's heads. And unfortunately, that doesn't help you. Because if that's going through your head, the person sitting across from you, they're going to feel that. And guess what? It's not about you. It's not about whether you need the sale, quote unquote. It's about that person sitting in front of you. That's someone's mother. That's someone's father. That's someone's son. That's someone's daughter. That's someone's brother. That's someone's sister. They're a hero to somebody. They have hopes. They have dreams. They have fears. They have disappointments they've gone through. They're sitting in front of you because they're hoping against hope that you're not going to be a charlatan that's going to try to take their money and deliver nothing because they've been disappointed one time too many, right? They're hoping you're a good person. And if you are a good person, and I'm sure you are, if you're listening to this program, then you need to take all the attention off of you and your need for the sale or anything else. You need to put all the attention on that individual sitting in front of you. What is the pain that they're going through? Let's say you're someone who coaches people in relationships. And let's say you work specifically with men, and that what you do is you help these men when their wives have left them and said goodbye. If you're sitting in front of them, you need to ask them, when this happened, how it's making them feel. What's the effect been on their life? What's the effect been on their health? Are they getting enough sleep? Are they too stressed out to sleep? Is their hair falling out in clumps? Are they starting to see their money be siphoned off by lawyers? You know, are they starting to lose faith and belief in themselves? You need to just understand all this. And then you need to come forward and have a conversation with them about what the impact is going to be if they don't solve this in 3 months, in 6 months, in 12 months. And then you need to ask them if they're ready to solve this situation. And then you need to show them how you can help them solve this situation. That's the only time you talk about you and what you do. The rest of the time is all about them and what they need. If you put the attention on them and you take it off of you, then the right people are going to notice that you care and they're going to do business with you. And if you don't, then you won't. It's that simple.
Yeah, so it's a very personal approach. It's building a rapport with the individual, making sure they understand that you're not there to sell them something. What you're trying to do is understand what their needs, desires, wants, and hopes and aspirations are, so that they can, let's say, open up to you and really explain what they're looking for, so you can really solve their true problem and perhaps not what appears to be on the surface, I guess. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I'll tell you a little story. We had a young man come to us a few years back. He was 25 at the time, and he was a personal fitness trainer. He's a good fellow. He wanted to help people. He wanted to help them get healthy and fit and all that. But he was not doing well at all. He was making $1,500 a month or less, candidly. And he lives in my hometown of Toronto. I don't know if you know much about Toronto, but Toronto is like the London of Canada, the New York of Canada. And if you know anything about cost of living in those two other cities, then you've got a sense of what the cost of living in Toronto is like.
Sure.
Right. $1,500, it's not going to cut it. He needed to borrow money from his mom and dad. And this young man came to me and I asked him, so who do you help? Oh, I can help anybody. Anybody. No. Who do you help? He goes, really? I can help anybody. I said, anybody with a wallet and a pulse? He goes, yeah. No. That's not going to work. You need to narrow your focus. He goes, okay. Well, my dad's a doctor. I can go help doctors. They make a lot of money. That's a great message. You're a doctor. My dad's a doctor and you make a lot of money. Come work with me. It didn't work out so good for him. And then, you know, after that, I said, no, this isn't working. He goes, okay. I'll narrow it further. I work with cardiologists. They make more money than doctors. Great message. You make more money than doctors. Come give some to me. Didn't work out for him. Then he started working out with a fellow who was a Paralympic athlete, an Afro-Cuban fellow named Papito Wilson. Mr. Wilson loved working with Dan, my client, and he really helped him get some great results and go back to competing in the games. And I really got a sense that he was loving working with Papito. And he came to me and says, Nikki, I'm really loving working with Papito. And I got the sense that, you know, he wanted to work with folks with missing limbs. And he said, Nikki, I want to work with folks with missing limbs. And I said, that's a great idea. Let's get started. And Dave, in 6 weeks, he signed up 400 clients.
Oh, blimey, 400.
400 clients. He could no longer do one-on-one coaching. He had to come up with some sort of group program. And he no longer made just $1,500 a month. He quickly added a zero to it, and he almost added a second zero to it. He did add a second zero. It was $100,000 a month that he was making. If you think about this,
why? Incredible.
Well, he did that because the attention went off of him and making sales to doctors and cardiologists, and it went on to folks with missing limbs. And that was beautiful. And the second thing was that his message wasn't, you have money. His message was, I'm going to make you strong and powerful. We're going to train and we're going to make you. And the underlying message to that was, you're just as good as anybody else. And I'm going to show it to you and prove it to you by treating you just as good as anybody else. And if you can imagine, nobody else was trying to work with people with missing limbs in the fitness space. I mean, they just thought these aren't really prospects. They would be wrong about that because they really aren't prospects. And Dan had a great business because of that.
That's quite incredible. He really zoned in, as you say, became focused and found a desperate need by the sounds of it. So that's an interesting story that really leads on quite nicely to your second step when you refer to committing to your vision of success. And at first, it sounds like he didn't have a vision. He had a desire. But when he started to focus it down, then things started to happen. So just so I can confirm, what is this statement, committing to your vision of success? What are those two words, commitment and vision? What are their implied responsibility? What's the importance to your clients to understand clearly what those are?
Well, that's a great question. And I'll tell you, it's my belief that when you want to start a business, if you're going to be successful, you really need to have four qualities. And without these four qualities, you will never be successful. With these four qualities, your chances of success are wonderful. The first of these qualities is decisiveness. You have to make a decision, which is to cut off the alternative. You know, decide comes from a Latin word. The root of it is side, and side is to kill. You know, and there are all these other words with side in them, besides the side, like homicide, regicide, suicide, you know, patricide. They're all about killing, and deciding is about killing off the alternative. So you must say to yourself, I am making a decision to kill off the alternative to victory. Okay. The second step is you must commit. You can't just tell yourself, I'm going to try this for a while. You know, I'll give it 60 days. If it works out, terrific. If it doesn't, if you want to be successful, you have to have a vision for success. You have to decide that you're going to be successful, and you have to commit to that vision. And there can be no substitute for victory, to paraphrase the great American general Douglas MacArthur, because there is no substitute for victory. And, you know, you also need to be coachable, obviously. You need to get some help from folks who can coach you through the victory. And then finally, you got to be resourceful. It's going to take time, energy, and money for you to become successful. And you cannot become successful if you don't have those. And I'll tell you another story. There was another man who came to us. His name was Victor. He was already a very successful man. He was a real estate investor and a coach. And he coached people on how to start their own real estate investment business. He did well. He made six figures a year. But that wasn't his vision. That wasn't his commitment. He wanted to make seven figures a year. He was dissatisfied. So he committed to the vision, seven figures a year. And once he did that, you know, we really helped him get clear on what it was going to take. So he had the commitment. He was coachable, took the coaching. And within 8 months, he grew his business from where he was to seven figures a year. In fact, he had a lineup of clients waiting to come see him. We taught him what he needed to do from a thought leader point of view to have clients come to him, and it worked really, really well for him. And it was all from committing to a bigger vision, because he was already successful. He could have just continued to coast, but that wasn't good enough. The vision was for something greater, and so he achieved it.
Right. There's something about vision that I think some people struggle with. The difference between a dream and a vision. Now, a lot of people imagine they want to be super rich. They want to be earning millions of pounds or dollars per year. But dreaming about it and having a vision of it appears to be two different things. So what's the difference that actually enables you to step forward into the direction you want to go, as opposed to just dreaming about it?
Well, I think these four things that I just talked about really outline it better than anything, right? You've got to make that decision. You've got to decide. You've got to commit to it. And it can't be a time-limited commitment. It's got to be a commitment to victory.
Right. So it almost has to be as clear as a picture then. Yeah. Is it almost like a route to get somewhere as well? Is it like a clear plan? So you can almost see a movie of your transition from where you are now to where you want to be. Is it that much detail? Is that needed as well to accompany those 4 points you raised?
Well, look, part of what you do is you definitely got to have to be coachable, and you're going to have some help. I mean, nobody does anything alone. Everybody needs some mentorship. They need some sort of peer group to be a part of. You need somebody who's helped other people succeed. You need to be part of a group of people who sees things the same way. I believe in that wholeheartedly. I not only provide mentorship to people, I'm being mentored by folks. And it's very important to be a part of a group of people who are all looking forward in the same direction. That's super, super important from my point of view. You know, those things are what will allow you to develop the plan. I don't think anybody starts off having the answer as to exactly how they're going to get there, but that's one of the reasons why those four qualities, are extremely important. And then making sure that you've got good mentorship to move you forward. I'll tell you another story. There's a fellow who came to us. His name is Chris. He's from New York City. And he was doing well. He's making $150,000 a year, but you know, he's in Manhattan. That's not a lot of money. And he had an acupuncture clinic, Chinese healing arts. And he had A-list clients, Robert De Niro and folks like that.
Oh, crikey.
But, you know, he wanted to grow his business and he didn't know why it wasn't growing. Well, we took one look at it and we saw he was undercharging. He had A-list clients and he was charging C-list prices. So I said, no, you need to raise your fees. He goes, okay. I think he thought I was going to tell him 10%. I said, no, 20-fold your fees. He started hyperventilating. Oh, I can't do it. I can't do it. Who's going to pay? Who's going to pay? It took us a while, but we finally persuaded him to 7-fold his fees. And as soon as he did that, he 20-folded his business. He went from $150,000 to $1.2 million. He was coachable. He had a mentor, me, that showed him what he needed to do, what he was doing wrong. And the problem with a lot of folks in businesses, especially coaches, it's hilarious. They don't have their own coach. it's just wild. Yeah. I'm a coach. Yes, but I don't have a coach. So you're not a product of your own product. Not good.
Okay. I think that fifth thing you've mentioned there about who you surround yourself with, who you work with, who teaches you, involves other people. And for me, you saying that actually made those four things, that was for me the gel that brought those four things together. So I think that was a critical piece of information, I feel, that's so important there to realize. You mentioned about becoming resourceful, the third step, resourcefulness. And obviously, entrepreneurs consider themselves to be resourceful already. Of course, I'm resourceful. I'm an entrepreneur, should we say. But there appears to be a further transition to, because the word becoming says you're not quite there yet. So is this transition the product of working with the other people, the coaches and such, or is it in addition working on yourself in some way that helps you to get to become as resourceful as you need to be?
Well, that's a great question. And I'll tell you a couple of stories that show this. I used to be a top-level fitness coach, and I used to have a lot of A-list clients. And one of my clients is, you know, motivational speaker and author Robin Sharma, who wrote the famous book, The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. And when I was coaching Robin, we'd have lots of great conversations. One of the things that, you know, Robin did for me was he would share his wisdom with me. And he wanted me to be more successful. I asked him a question one day, and I said, hey, Robin, how do you think, could I double my income this year? Do you think it's possible? He goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. I said, how would you recommend I go about doing it? He says, simple, triple your investment in personal and professional development. You need to hire more coaches, go to more conferences, do more courses. Triple your investment in that. And I'm like, triple? It's a lot of money. He said, yes, but it's a lot of return. I'm like, I listened to him. I did it. And, you know, over the years, I've spent over $250,000 on my personal and professional development. And every time I would make a decision, it was a big decision. But right now, it pays off for itself in a couple of months, you know, that investment. So it's very important to understand that that's important. And a lot of folks, when they're shown the opportunity to invest in themselves, an answer that a lot of people in the coaching industry give, oh, that's too much money. And I'm like, really? Are you a business person? I'm a business person. Okay, great. Do you understand the difference between spending and investment? And they say they do. I do. I go, okay, what is it? They can't answer it. And here's the difference. Spending is to lay out money with no expectation of return. Investment is to lay out money with an absolute expectation of a multiple return. So one is laying out money with no expectation of return, like buying a motorbike, buying jewelry, going on vacation, wonderful things to do, but there's no expectation of return. And the other, investing, is investing with an expectation of return. Now, one of the things I promise my clients is I'll help you add 1 to 2 zeros to your annual income while working 10 to 20 hours less per week. That's my big promise. E-Circle Academy, the program for coaches and consultants who are looking to add 1 to 2 zeros to their annual income while working 10 to 20 hours less per week. That's what E-Circle Academy is. That's all it is, right? And when people listen to that, many people go, that's a big promise. I go, it is. I agree. And it's a promise I'll stand behind every single time, right? So if you are a coach or a consultant and you, say, have a 100,000-pound-a-year business, as an example, and you want a 250,000-pound-a-year business in the next 12 months, and you understand that you need to invest in yourself, your most important asset, you, then when someone comes to you that can credibly demonstrate that they know what the heck they're talking about, and they say, we will get you from 100,000 to 250,000, provided that you are coachable, resourceful, decisive, and committed to making all this happen, and here's how we do it, the question then becomes, is this person credible, or are they full of crap? If they're full of crap, obviously you don't do business with them. But if they're credible, the only question in your mind has got to be, will this work for me? Because that it works is clear. If that person's credible, it works. What they're saying works. They've done it for other people. It works. Will it work for me? And the only person who can answer that is you. And the only reason it wouldn't work for you is because you don't believe or you won't do the work. You don't believe in you or you won't do the work. If you don't believe in you, get out of business. Go work for someone. You're better off, right? Because at least you'll have a chance to build your confidence and you'll make money and you won't be constantly beating yourself up if you don't believe in you. But if you do believe in you and someone says, invest 10,000 to get an extra 150,000 and you don't understand that's a good investment.
Exactly. Yeah, it's effectively a no-brainer. It's getting over that step, isn't it, sometimes where people have that doubt and lack of confidence in themselves to actually make it return as well.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I'm going to come on to some of the points you made a bit earlier later, but step four was about attracting decisive people and avoiding the dabblers. Now, this implies there's a filter somewhere. So does this mean that one needs to create a selective type of like sales funnel? Or how does one go about the selection process when you're trying to identify your ideal clients?
Well, look, if you want decisive clients, you need to be decisive. If you are not decisive, if you take your sweet time with all your decisions, that's who you're going to attract. And you attract who you are. Pretty much that dead simple, right? I am a decisive individual. I don't take my time to make decisions. I'm a yes or I'm a no pretty quickly, right? And in this situation, I will say this. If you're a coach and you are not decisive, you're hurting yourself as well as your clients. You really are. And you're attracting people that are going to just nickel and dime you and say, I don't know, I'll get back to you. You know the story of Napoleon Hill and how he came to be Napoleon Hill?
I've read some of his books. Yeah.
So when he was a young man, he was a newspaper reporter, and his editor sent him to the home of the richest man in the world at the time, Andrew Carnegie. And he spent 3 hours with Mr. Carnegie. Back then, the richest man in the world seemed to have a lot more time on his hands than he probably does today. And at the end of the 3 hours, Mr. Carnegie said, "Mr. Hill, how would you like to spend the weekend at my estate so we can get to know one another a bit better? I'd like to speak with you some more." And I don't know, Dave, what you would have done if the richest man in the world said, "How would you like to spend the weekend at my estate? I'd like to speak with you some more." Me personally, pretty much, unless it was something going on for my kids, I would be an automatic yes. You know what I mean? So Mr. Hill was an automatic yes. And anyways, he spent a nice, lovely weekend together at Mr. Carnegie's estate. And at the end of the visit, Mr. Carnegie said, "Mr. Hill, I have a proposition for you. We have been speaking about my philosophy of success for the last few days. How would you like to be the one to bring my philosophy of success to the masses? I will not give you any stipend, but what I will do is I will give you the letters of introduction to the 500 most successful men and women in these United States. And you can go meet them and interview them and use what they teach you to put this philosophy together in the form of a book." It took Napoleon Hill 31 seconds to say yes. And the rest is history. You know, he wrote a whole bunch of extremely successful books. And 20 years later, he came to see the great man one last time before he passed on. And during that visit, Mr. Carnegie said to him, "Mr. Hill, you did not know this, but I actually had a stopwatch under the table when I made that offer to you. And if you had taken more than a minute to make up your mind, I was going to withdraw the offer." He was like, "Oh my God, thank God I decided quickly," he thought to himself. And he said, "But why, Mr. Carnegie?" And he said, "Well, you've been studying my philosophy of success. Answer your own question, sir." He said, "All right, fair enough." And he said, "Because successful people are decisive people." And he said, "Yes, in my experience, successful people quickly gather the facts. And as soon as they have the facts, within moments, say yes or no. That's what successful people do." And he said, "Everyone else dillies and dallies." And he said, "Before I approach you, Mr. Hill, I'd approach four of the most eminent educators in these United States. Every single one of them said to me, 'I'll need some time to get back to you. I'll need a week.'" And he said, "Two of them never got back to me. Two of them got back to me in a month and said no." And I knew that I had the wrong people. I needed someone with a decisive frame of mind. And I was like listening to that going, "Damn, that's why decisiveness matters." And I've sought to become more decisive and take less time making up my mind about things. And if you're a coach, you should do the same.
That's a great message and a brilliant story to back it up. You know, nobody would dispute that Napoleon Hill had a huge influence. Dale Carnegie, obviously, is a huge name even now. So there's testimony to that point. Now we're coming close to step five and step six. And step five, you've touched on about raising rates. And this is quite often about confidence, because people probably would say, hold on a minute, what is my worth? What's my worth to other people? Am I confident that I can go and ask them for $50 more? And you saying about doubling, tripling, 10 times or 20 times sizing the rates. And it can be very, very stressful, I guess, for those people to say, actually, I'm going from this level of person I thought I was to a completely new level of person that I actually am, but I can't see what the difference is. So how do you help to convince people of their worth, I guess, in this way, and to pick the right value so they don't perhaps oversell themselves or undersell themselves? How do you find that sweet spot?
There ain't no danger of people overselling themselves. Trust me, right now, that's not a problem right now in this world. Everybody undersells themselves, except me and people I've coached. But pretty much everybody else undersells themselves. And the reason for that is that they either don't believe what they have is worth it, or they do believe what they have is worth it, but they don't believe anyone's going to pay. Just like my friend with Chris with the acupuncture clinic.
Yeah.
And that's because they're putting all the attention on themselves again. And here's the deal. Just imagine, Dave, that you were a relationship coach who worked with men who are entrepreneurs who own businesses that were worth at least 20 million pounds. And you only worked with men who had gotten a note from their wife's solicitor saying, bye-bye. Now, what is the cost of a divorce to a man worth 20 million pounds? Well, never mind the emotional cost to him and his children and his family and everybody that knows that couple, which is incalculable. Never mind the health cost of not being able to get proper sleep and having stress that causes, you know, a negative impact on their digestive system, on their heart, makes it more likely that they get cancer. Never mind the self-belief that takes a massive hit. Oh my God, I'm a terrible person. I'm a terrible man. I'm a terrible husband. All those horrible thoughts. The financial cost to a man worth 20 million pounds is at least 10 million pounds. Would you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. Yeah. Usually 50% is a minimum.
Yeah. Plus whatever the lawyers manage to swindle.
And there's kids involved as well. Then.
Yeah. Now let's say that you were able to stop that. You were able to help them either reconcile or at least, you know, go through this without this destroying their net worth. And you saved this individual 8 million of the 10 million pounds they would lose. Let's say that was your track record. What do you think you should charge for saving this man $8 million immediately? Never mind the lifetime value of all that stress and hell that you got him out of. How much do you think that's worth? 10 million total? 15 million? Now, if you save a man $15 million, what do you think the right amount to charge him is? Is it 50 pounds?
Oh, that would be a bargain.
A bargain? Would he take you seriously?
Absolutely not.
Would he listen to a word you had to say if you said, I'll charge you 50 pounds?
Yeah, you have no credibility. Yeah.
Right. Would he show up ready to listen to your advice and do the work and get the outcome? No. If you charge him 50 pounds, he'd lose that 10 million. No. You would charge him $100,000 to $250,000 then, or pounds, because then he'd take you seriously. He'd listen to you. He'd do what you said, and he'd get the outcome. If you don't charge what you should charge, they won't show up. They won't take you seriously. They won't do the work. They won't get the outcome. You need to charge not a gouge rate, but enough of a rate so people look at this and go, yes, and they show up and they do what they need to do. Otherwise, you hurt your client.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're scared to charge enough. Wow.
Yeah.
You hurt your client. I'm never going to hurt my client. If I were to work with you or with anybody else and you said, Nikki, I want you to make me add a zero to my income, add two zeros to my income. Believe me, I'm going to charge you properly.
Yeah. That's a superb way of putting it. You know, nobody's going to go out and buy a Maserati for £2,000 because the perception of the value isn't there at all, is it?
Not at all.
So, absolutely. And that's a really good point and message you have there. And I think that's a good way of explaining to people about undercharging and actually reducing your worth in front of other people's eyes. So before we just jump onto the last step six, you've really shared some fantastic knowledge and wisdom here. How would people find out more about what you do, your teachings, how they follow you, how would they reach out to you? What's the best places to go?
ecircleacademy.com. It's got everything there. It's got a bunch of resources, and the best resource of all, if you are a business owner and you want to have a face-to-face or Zoom conversation, just go and click on a button there that says book a success call, and you know, fill that out if you're ready to make some changes in your life and your business. Let's have a conversation.
Fantastic. So that's go to ecircleacademy.com. Brilliant. It's great to hear. Now, touch on the last step, six. And this is something I can understand people get very uncomfortable with. You mentioned about asking for the sale. You don't want to come across as sleazy, as overbearing, as a, you know, no disrespect, like a window salesperson who wants to get you to sign the piece of paper before they walk out the door again. So what would you say were the best takeaways here for people to achieve the sale without making their clients feel uncomfortable or, you know, in any way not aligned to work with you?
Look, I only ask people to have a conversation with me if I'm clear about a couple things. Number one is that they are genuinely in need of the type of help that I offer. They're hurting. Their business is not as strong as they want it to be. Like if I were to talk to you, you know, when this call's over, I'll probably spend a couple minutes with you to get to know you a little better. You've learned all about me. I'd love to learn a bit about you. And you're in business and you say, my business is going great. I'm making £1 million a year. We're growing to 2 million. I'm not going to jump on and go, well, Dave, you should work with me. No, the guy's doing great. You know what I mean? It's not appropriate, right? I'm not here to get the sale. I'm here to have a genuine connection with a fellow human being. And in that genuine connection, perhaps there's an opportunity for us to work together or not. But the connection is the most important thing. Good connection happens. I feel I've done my job. I feel I've served you. I feel I've served your audience. That's the most important thing. If I came on and had a conversation with you with the sole intention of pitching you, oh my God, that's gross to me and it's gross to you. Who the hell wants that? Who the hell needs that? Nobody. I don't want someone doing that to me. You know what I mean? So I won't be doing it to anybody else. You've got to only ask for people to work with you when it's in their interest to do so. So if that's the case, then if it is in their interest to do so and you don't ask them to work with you, then shame on you. Shame on you. Because you let your fear about yourself get in the way of serving that person. So to me, that's super important. I absolutely, every single time, will ask someone who I can help if they'd like my help. And then it's up to them to choose.
Brilliant. And a good, strong message. And I've got a feeling that be a number of people will be inspired by what you've said today and will probably want to investigate more. So if we give them a flavor of what sort of framework of activities should they be prepared for? If they got in contact with you and they become and joined, as you say, a client of eCircle Academy, what should they be prepared for in terms of time and money and input? What sort of training should they expect to do? And is it essential that they live in Canada, or can this be something that they can do from wherever they are in the world?
No. We actually have had a lot of clients from the United States. We've had a couple clients from the UK as well. I've got someone from New Zealand who's coming to work with us in January, which is terrific. Kind of person that we like to help is someone who's usually had some experience in business. If you're brand new at business, it probably isn't good. Now, if you've been in a similar business, but you're brand new at this business, that's fine. But if you're brand new, period, it's tough. But if you've been in business for a few years, you have some level of success, but you really want to get to that next level. You know, you want to add a couple of zeros to your income. 1 0 for sure, 2 0s preferably, and you want to work a little bit less than you're working now, this is probably a very good opportunity for us to have a conversation and see what's been getting in your way. You know, and if I can tell you one last story before we close off, there was a woman who came to us a few years ago, and she was the country director for Canada for one of the world's largest personal development companies. She brought someone on to work with her to help her grow the business. Unfortunately, it didn't work out too well, kind of like Steve Jobs and John Sculley at Apple back in the day. And Steve Jobs had to leave. So she was Steve Jobs, this fellow John Sculley, and she left. And for 18 months, she floundered, didn't really know what she was going to do next. And she found out about us. And anyways, we started to work with her. We started to see that this woman was really focused on herself, and we needed to help her focus on others. So she decided she wanted to work with entrepreneurs with $10 million a year turnover or more. And these were the folks who were burning out, just burning out. And they couldn't seem to avoid it. You know what I mean? And the impact of it on them was horrendous. Right? Their relationships were being destroyed. Their health was being destroyed. And their business was starting to be negatively impacted too. So she did well. First month, she did 10,000 in profit. Second, she did 12,000. Third month, she did 18,000. Fourth month, she did $62,200. Did $62,200. Think about that. That's pretty darn awesome. And then after that, I had a football tournament in Ottawa. My son plays center back. And so we went to Ottawa, where she lives, 5-hour drive from my city, Toronto. And I called her up because she had a son my son's age. And I said, hey, how would you and your son like to come and hang out with me and my son during your tourney? And maybe we'll watch a game, have some lunch. She said, sure. And she brought her son, and everybody had a grand old time. And then we went home. A few weeks later, we had one of our quarterly branded thought leader immersion workshops, which is where we teach people how to add that zero or two to their income and work less. And we come to the point where we were having our enrollment opportunity, the upsell.
Yep.
To our year-long program. And the way I do that is I ask some of our existing members to share with the new folks what's been going on. So I asked if anyone wanted to share their experience. And before I had a chance to pick anybody, she just lifted her arm and bounded on stage and said, me. I'm like, okay, great. She looked around the room, and all of a sudden she started to cry. And like any red-blooded man faced with a crying female, I panicked. What did I do wrong? But of course, I kept the calm exterior. And she looked at me and she says, Nikki, when you and your little son came to Ottawa, and when me and my little son came to visit you and your little son, my little son, excited little boy, went to me and said, Mommy, who are we going to go meet? And she said, oh, we're going to go meet Nikki Ballou and his son. And she said, all of a sudden, my little son got very serious, lowered his voice and said, oh, are we going to go meet the man who saved our family? And Dave, I'm not a man who cries in public, but I start to cry. And we hugged. And in between her tears, she said to me, you didn't know this, Nikki, but when I came to see you, the bank was about to foreclose on our home. We had not paid our mortgage in months. We had not made money in months. And my husband and I were fighting practically every day in front of our three small children under the age of 12. It looked like we were going to lose our precious family. You literally helped us save our family. And so this taught me two things. One is you never know what someone's dealing with, you know, and it's important to continue to love and serve everybody. And the other thing that was pretty darn incredible was that I realized that I was put here on earth to serve people like her. And I just asked God, who's the next person like this woman that I can be of service to? And I pray that I'm worthy of that when God sends them my way. That's it.
That's a very nice and touching story. And if everybody could have a half of that feeling of gratitude for what you've done for somebody else, I think they'd be very lucky people. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing so much wisdom and knowledge today. I'm sure people will have to think about this quite heavily and take some action, be decisive, shall we say, in what they're going to do next with their lives. So really do appreciate your time, Nikki. Thank you very much, and I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
Thank you, my friend. You too. God bless you.
Take care. Bye.
So there's another Real Life Buyer podcast. I do hope you enjoyed it, and it's given you some ideas and inspiration for greater action and achievement. If you are a purchasing or a supply chain professional, business owner or director, come and join my Facebook group, the Purchasing and Supply Chain Community Hub, a safe place to engage with like-minded, friendly people. See you soon. Bye.